Make It Right, the manufacturing podcast.
This week on the Make It Right podcast, we begin to break down the Align process letter by letter to understand the five steps Kevin Snook has explored and identified over his 30 years in the industry as the keys to manufacturing success. A is the first step, and it stands for aim from the heart. And Kevin's going to explain how this process works and how it can lead to success. So, hi, Kevin. How are you doing today?
Very well. Thank you, Janet.
Good. So, in your book, you say that the role of the leader is to, one, set the destination and direction for the organization, two, to set the framework of the action plan, and three, to set the ground rules and the expectations for your team. So the Align process defines the role of the leader as the one who sets direction, and then he's to help people get there. So the leader is actually an enabler.
Yes, that's absolutely right. And I think that needs to be the way in every organization. If we... I say that there's two main focuses for the leader. One is setting that very clear direction so that everybody knows where we're going to. Now, that's critical because everybody needs to know with the sense of passion from the leader exactly what they're looking for from me as an individual and from us as an organization. And then as I go through my journey every day as a frontline employee or an employee at any level in the organization, I'm going to hit barriers. There's going to be things that I believe we ought to do to take the company in the right direction. But for some reason, I either don't have the tools or the skills or the power to be able to make that right choice. And that's where the leadership team comes in. They need to help me overcome the hurdles that I need to overcome to do the things that I want to do in order to take the business forward.
Okay, so you're saying in that role then that the leader is supposed to inspire rather than motivate. So explain what the difference is here and why it's the inspire part that matters.
Well, if I'm inspired, it's coming from inside me. And that means that, you know, whatever's happening from an outside perspective, I still want to get up in the morning. I still want to do the very best I can. I still want to, you know, get out there and do my part of the work. Because it's inside me. It's part of my journey, my direction, as well as the company's direction. Motivation is coming from outside. You know, that's where you need somebody else there to get you to the gym in the morning, or, you know, to make sure that you know, you're doing the things that you ought to be doing. And this is where I see it differently. If the leader is inspirational, if they're inspired on their own journey, then that inspiration shines out of them. And then we have to find what is inspiration, what's the inspiration for each individual in the business to make them also want to, you know, break the barriers to take the business to the next level. And so I see the difference of inspiration and motivation, motivation coming from outside, inspiration from shining from within and helping us during the darker times to really want to overcome the barriers.
So you say you have to figure out what inspires each individual. In a huge company, that's going to be a big job.
Yeah, well, that's actually the responsibility of the individual to find out what inspires them and then how they apply that to their role in the company. And so what the leaders are doing is showing people that is possible within this company, you know, that you can have, you can help find your dream and your goal within the company. And as part of that, you know, if we're all on the same, you know, we're on the same boat and we're all leading in the same direction, then you have the maximum opportunity to bring that inspiration into your life as well. So it's not that the leader has to go and find out what the inspiration is for every individual, but the leader has to set the groundwork or the framework for the individuals to be able to find their own inspiration and then to be able to apply that into their job.
Okay. So you suggest also that a leader needs to define his or her own compelling direction for the business. So when they're leading this company, they have to say, this is where we're going and we're going here because of this. So that's the big why. This may not be something that's really easy to figure out, but it's crucial for everything that follows in the Align process, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And it's not easy to figure out. You know, we in a way, we can't think through it. because, you know, our thoughts are one thing, what's coming from our heart is another thing. And this is where it really helps to have a coach or somebody, you know, to help really find out what is your why, what is your own personal journey, and then how do you get that applied? So as a leader, you may have to go through several iterations of thinking you've got your own direction, your own personal direction sorted out, and then translated that into the business direction. But you want to make sure that whatever you're doing in your business or in your life is really something that you have a huge inspiration for. The way to do that is just to go through those iterations of, well, why do I really want to do this? Well, why do I really want to do this? And you know, what's the underlying motivation? For some people, it's family. For some people, it's, you know, it's health. For some people, it's some other drive that you are doing, that you want to grow the business in order to achieve this internal desire. And having a coach to help you pull that out can be really helpful.
Okay, so if you want to get the most out of people, you want them to be inspired, you have to figure out how to inspire them to give the best to the business. Yes. That's probably easy if they have that compelling direction in them that is similar to the business. But if you're talking to people that are inspired, but not necessarily by the business, can you bring them on board, or do you sort of ask them to leave the nest?
It's very unlikely that the frontline employee is going to say, you know, the inspiration in my life is for this company to grow, right? Let's just get very honest about that. People have their own inspirations. What we can do as leaders is we can understand their inspiration and then help them achieve their goals as part of the business. And let's take an example. Let's say that one of my employees is a photographer, and that their goal, their inspiration, they're a manufacturing employee. So they're not a photographer in the business, they're a manufacturing employee in the business. But at home, their passion is photography, and they're desperate to get a picture in Nature magazine. Now, if I can help them within their scope in the business to be able to get the time to take sunset photographs, which is what they've always wanted to be able to do, then I'm the company they're going to want to be working for, because I'm the one company that understands their underlying passion, is going to help them achieve their underlying passion at work. And then what we also do is we, in that conversation, when they know that we care and we understand them, then we let them know what the business needs in order to be able to, you know, have them as a compelling employee as well. And so it's a matter of conversation, understanding people, and then how we pull out their dream and their inspiration and enroll it as part of their, you know, their day job.
Okay, so if you've got people inspired, you've set the direction for the organization, the next step that you go to is setting that framework for the action plan, right? So
Yes. If
you have a framework for something, it doesn't allow people to think outside the box for solutions that may get the business into a certain destination. Or am I reading this wrong?
Yeah, a lot of people think of structure or framework as restricting. And I think what you'll find is when you start using the right structure to take the business in the right direction, it's actually incredibly freeing. We don't want people to have to be thinking about areas of the business that they don't have any impact on, that they really can't change. So we want to clearly define the parts that they can change. Now, it's okay to listen to ideas about other things, but most people want to be listened to. They don't need their ideas to be put into place. If their ideas are not listened to, then it creates frustration and resentment. But if you listen to their ideas and then you can give them a compelling reason as to why that's not going to be done, then people are normally okay with that. You know, they feel like they've been understood anyway. And so I like the idea of a framework, or if in fact it's essential that there's a framework to keep people, you know, in line with the goal. Okay to explore things on the edges of the framework and make sure that people feel like they're properly understood, but we don't want people to be distracted by areas that they really can't influence.
Okay. Yeah, I guess it's the terror of the blank page or the blank canvas for some people. If you put a frame around something, they know exactly what they're supposed to do. But if you leave it wide open, then they start to worry about stuff that really they shouldn't be worrying about.
Yeah, and I talk a lot about we need very good integration between different departments, but different departments do need to know specifically what they're responsible for. And so it's no good having the quality guy trying to run the production line. You know, it's a clearly different role and responsibility. But the quality guy being involved with the production employee to make sure that they run that in the best possible way is absolutely necessary. So there's clear boundaries between roles and responsibilities. And then there's a clear responsibility to work across those boundaries, but leaving the responsibility in the place of the people that need to be doing that.
Is there anything that is absolutely standard in one of these frameworks?
Well, I would say yes, that absolute clarity between roles and responsibilities. And the quality department has a responsibility to the consumer, right? The quality department is ensuring that only very good quality product leaves the factory. That's different than the role of the production team, for example. And so there are going to be clear roles and responsibilities for each different position in the organization. That becomes quite standard.
So then there's individual frameworks and it becomes like a building block system. So this is your framework and it goes on top of that and there's your whole framework for the whole factory.
Yeah. So once the business leader has got a very clear and compelling direction, then they're going to put a framework around, well, we're going to play in this market, we're not going to play in that market, or we're going to work on these products and we're not going to work on those products. And that's their role of responsibility. And then within there, that breaks down into the organization, into each department. What specific part are you going to play in having the most positive effect of taking the business in the direction that we've already set?
Right. Your book says something that is really interesting, and it's absolutely true, but I'm not really sure that many people think of it this way, and that's the frontline worker should actually first be serving the customer and then management. So management should be enabling the frontline worker to best serve the customer in a way that doesn't harm the business. So it's a bit of a balancing act then for the leader, isn't it?
Yeah, I believe that the only person that pays us is the customer.
Right.
Everything else is an expense. And so, you know, the salespeople do a great job of bringing in the money from the customer. But everybody must have the customer in mind as they're doing work. I don't want to be thinking about how do I please my boss. I want to be thinking about how I please the customer by doing my job in the best way and then asking my boss for help and support in order to do the right things to please the customer. And so it really is a matter of the leadership team supporting the people who are closest to the point of the work to make great decisions that are going to please the people who are eventually, you know, giving the money to the company.
Yeah, because if the customer, who is technically the boss, turns around and doesn't like the product anymore, then everybody's in trouble.
Yeah, and everybody has a role in determining what's the right product. You know, the production line employee does not have a role to say, oh, you know, if I do this a little bit differently, then I think the customer might like it more. You know, that's not what I'm saying. You know, we have marketing teams that need to talk to the customer and salespeople that talk to the customer. We have R&D teams that design the best possible fit for the product for the customer. And the manufacturing employee is really there to make products to specifications that are determined by other groups that know better. However, when you're making that product, you want to have the customer in mind because you only want them to get the very best quality product into their hands at the best value for them. And so if the production line employee, for example, is thinking about quality, is thinking about value, is thinking about, you know, the use of the product, then they're gonna be serving the ultimate boss, which is the one that pays.
Right. How do you shift the organizational culture to one that is more aligned to the success of the business and its people?
You follow the five steps. So, I've tried this in many different ways in different companies. The reason that I designed the five steps is that they build on each other. And so having that very clear direction first and then building the other steps underneath, following the framework, I've found is the most simple way to get that entire business aligned. And if you wanted one word that came out from the overall thing, it's about listening to the employees. There's a lot of companies that are almost trying to abdicate or pass over the role of listening to employees because people are difficult. But all of the most successful companies that I've worked with are the ones who pay attention to their employees and listen to them very carefully and then help them along that path of serving the customer.
Okay. You talk in the book about something called the learning organization. What is a learning organization?
Well, first of all, it's incredibly important that leaders continue to learn. You can only know the latest best practices. You can only know, the best way to continue to motivate and enroll people if you are always learning. And so really a learning organization is one where we set up the structure that not only allows people to learn, but encourages people to learn, encourages people to be experts in their areas. I always tell, frontline employees that they are professionals. They're being paid to do a job. Whenever you're paid to do a job, it's your responsibility to learn how to do that job in the best possible way. And what the organization needs to do is to be able to put in the structure to allow people to learn and to encourage them to continually learn so that they can be the best possible professional.
Okay. You talk about identifying your very best people and working with them. This, as the leader, is to look through your organization, find the very best people and work with them. Now, should these people all be in management and that you work with them at the upper level, or are you looking for the best people, probably the best five throughout the organization at different levels to work with?
At different levels. So there's going to be people in each level that simply have a higher level of capability, a higher level of desire than others. And we want to be spending most of our time on the people that are going to have the biggest impact for us. And, that might be a Ronaldo in a football team. You know, the guy is simply cut from a different mold. And we want to be spending time building around him and spending a lot of our time. A lot of time leaders get drawn into spending time on the problem children. Mm-hmm. And that's not what we want to be looking at here. We want to be identifying the best people at each level in the organization and then really building their skills and capabilities, building on their strengths so that they can most effectively help the people around them.
You talked in a previous podcast about a fellow who was working on a line where they hadn't really had any computer activity or done anything with computers. And he was so excited. He wanted his phone hooked up to the system and all of this stuff. And he ended up moving from the front line up into management. So I guess that explains how the learning organization and finding the best people at all different levels actually works and is a success.
Yeah, and it really does work. Actually, one of the major questions I get from frontline employees when I do group discussions with them is, do I have any people that have achieved that, have got from the frontline up into the higher level of management? And I've seen many of them happen through my career. And it's fantastic when that happens, because then as a management employer or as a leader in the company, they really understand what's going on in the frontline. And I think that's a critical way. So I always want people from the front line to be able, the right people who have a passion for leadership. I always want them to be able to move through the organization and represent the front line at those higher levels.
Okay. I want to talk about your opinion of work-life balance, because you actually say that you find that term insulting. So I guess in a way, most people look at work as a negative word, and it really shouldn't be, and you don't see it as a negative word, right? So tell me your opinion on work-life balance.
Yeah, I believe that work should be such a compelling part of our life that that it competes with us for our time, with our if you like, our family life or our friends' life. It competes with that. And so I want people to love to go to work. I want them to love to do what they're doing, and to, you know, to feel like they have an absolute passion for it. And so I see it as a life-life balance. I see work as a part of life, an integral part of life that can and should be extremely enjoyable, challenging, worthwhile. And we want to get up in the morning and go and do that work part of our life. And of course, we want to come home. We want to get rested. We want to do other things, other variety. But I don't think it should be work-life balance where the life part has to be trying to balance out the misery of work, which is what a lot of people do. You know, they're living for the weekend. They're living for the time off. That's a horrible way, in my opinion, to spend your life. I would love to be able to create work environments, and I've seen work environments like this, where people love to come to work and they love to go home and see their families. To me, that's life-life balance.
Right. And when you find people that are enjoying their job, invariably there's going to be people that are in an organization, no matter how great it is, that you call energy vampires, the people that just will try and suck the joy out of everything. As a leader, how do you cope with those people?
Well, first of all, I try to find out what their passion is. Most people who are resentful or who are, you know, trying to work against the system or against the majority, they do have a passion somewhere. And it's possible that they've just heard things the wrong way, or they just don't see how they fit in with this kind of new way that we're going to be working. And so I want to give them the opportunity. I want to understand from them. But in the end, if they are just one of those people who's just going to fight everything and is going to be against it, but is really not adding any positive value, then we have to work out whether they're the right people to be in the boat. You know, if you were an Olympic rowing team and you're trying to get the boat across the line to win the gold medal, you're not going to be having one person on that boat who is, you know, not doing the diet, not doing the training, not, you know, rowing in the right direction. At some point, you've got to let them get out of the boat. And what I feel is that people like that are probably going to be more happy somewhere else. So I'll have the conversation with them and say, look, this is the way we're going. This is your role in this way that we're going. We want to be able to mold that to be inspirational for you. But really, if it's not, then this is not the right place for you to be.
Right. I want to ask you about something that I saw in the book that I thought, wow, is there businesses that really do that? The part where you talked about the restaurant versus the canteen at work. So describe this for me, and have you actually seen a real kind of restaurant at a factory?
Yes, and I've seen this work in two ways. I've seen, let me say a little bit more about it first.
Sure,
Our frontline employees, they're the ones that are doing the real hard work every day. You know, sitting in meetings and having discussions at your desk, that's not hard work, right? Running a noisy, hot environment, that's hard work. And those people deserve to have good food in a good restaurant. And they deserve to have the best quality food. And I've seen it where we have changed the restaurant conditions so that people feel like they're being well treated. And then we've seen the impact of that on the organization. And we've also seen where we've changed the production floor to, you know, maybe we've done 5S or Lean or other high levels of standard on the production floor. And then the employees have insisted that that gets rolled out into what was a canteen to make it more like a restaurant. And so this really is a critical factor. I talk about restaurants and restrooms, you know, because I also believe that frontline employees deserve to have clean and effective and, you know, good restrooms. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, those two areas, I think, yes, I've definitely seen them working in different factories. And sometimes they're inspired by the employees. Sometimes they are done in order to give the employees some kind of motivation.
Wow. That's awesome. Okay. So I guess the next letter in a line is L, which will be our next chat on chapter 4 of the Make It Right book. Tell me a little bit of what we're in for with L in a line.
So this is all about, once we've got a very clear and compelling direction in, you know, the aim from the heart, then the next part is L, which is lead with the frontline. And so this is all a matter of getting the frontline employees' input into the action plan to make sure that we're learning from the people that are closest to the points of decisions and seeing how we need to be able to help them work on the priorities that we've set for the business.
Great. Okay, so Kevin, I am pretty sure that people are listening and they have questions for you. So if people do have a question, we'll address them in the next couple of podcasts, but they can send a question to you at makeitrightbook.com and we'll look the questions over and answer a couple of them next time.
Yeah, it's always fantastic to hear what, you know, what's really in people's minds. There's times when people, you know, say, oh, this sounds like a bit of a dream, or, you know, maybe these things don't really work in real life. But if we have a chance to discuss that together, then I can show you how it really does work.
Yeah. Okay, great. Kevin, great to talk to you. Thanks very much. We'll chat to you next time for chapter 4.
Thank you very much.